celebrated comedian and panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula Poundstone joins us now. She's got awards and honors and publications aplenty to her name. She's touring her stand-up act right now with a visit to Green Bay coming up this Saturday at the Meyer Theater.
Paula Poundstone is with us now. She's a comedian, actress, and panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to coming to Wisconsin, and I want to tell people, so you don't rush out to get me a gift, I already have a cheese scarf.
Okay, that is a top gift here in Wisconsin. I want to ask a little bit about what your shows are like. I hear that they're very improvisational. You're not someone who goes out on stage with a set that is memorized word for word. You like to keep it loosey-goosey and respond to what's going on. Why does that feel more comfy to you?
Well, for one thing, because I have almost zero short-term memory, memorizing anything is just agonizing. And then, even when I think I have, I get nervous and half of it flies out of my head. And so, I don't know, many years ago, I've been doing this job for 36 years, and many years ago, it dawned on me that oftentimes the really fun part of the night was the part when I forgot what I was going to say. And so I began sort of allowing myself to do that. And, the freedom just sort of makes the night a lot more fun. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. And, it might remind me of some, story that I've told before, or else we just go in an entirely different direction. And I don't know, seems to be working out okay.
And I know that you talk about screen addiction. Maybe it's not the funniest part of your night, you say, but it is something that's been a big issue. And you've got audiences now who have their screens there. There have been allegations in the comedy world of joke stealing. Do you ever call anybody out for being on their phone?
No, I don't think I ever. Every now and then I see a device here or there. The truth is, we're so addicted as a culture at this point that if people, when they say turn your phone off, people can't. They have such anxiety about it that I'm not sure the show would be funny to people if they were forced really to put their thing away and turn their phone off. So yeah, I can see it glowing here and there in the crowd. Although I like to tell myself that I have most of their attention. It changes the brain, and in our children, it's actually causing brain damage. And so I think we have to take another course. People like to tell me it's not addiction, that they just enjoy using it, and I explain to them, I love to play ping pong. I love to tap dance. I love to practice the drums. I have never tried to do any one of those things while driving in such a way that the cops couldn't see. Because those are things I enjoy. They are not things I am addicted to.
Well, I was looking over everything that you've done over the years. You've got a lot of firsts there, especially for women. You were the first woman to perform stand-up at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, first woman to win the Cable Ace for Best Comedy Special. I wonder how you feel about that. Obviously, it's great for women comics, but how do you feel about having, this association with being a female comic? Are you ready to be done with it, or are you mostly just proud of it?
Well, the smaller you make the pool, the better your opportunity at being a big fish in it. And so if I, if we narrowed it to, women with dark hair, I would have even more accolades. And if we narrowed it to, women who do stand up and take tap dance on the side, I would kill. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think the whole male-female comedy thing, yes, does to some degree sort of ghettoize women comics. But by the way, I've participated in it in as many times as I have damned it. If somebody's making a documentary about women in comedy and I wasn't included, I guess I would feel bad about that. But at the same time, it is a genderless job. Funny is funny. It's fun to go out and laugh. Not only is it fun to go out and laugh, But it's mentally healthy to go out and laugh. It is, you know, scientifically sound. It's this really cool thing that nature, for whatever reason, has given us. It's healing. It reduces pain. And that thing of not being at home watching stuff on YouTube or even television or DVD, but being out with the group and being caught up in that wave of laughter is like no other experience. So I figure, you know, the more things you're willing to laugh at, the healthier you have the possibility of being.
And that may be one reason why Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a hit with audiences. This is the NPR game show. How different is what you do there from, say, your stand-up act?
Well, I don't answer any questions about the week's news in my stand-up act, which sometimes I think, you know, I have a lot of audience members that come to see me because they're familiar with me from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I think a lot of times they're surprised that I'm not answering questions about the week's news. And I probably have just as many fans that come to see me because they've been longtime fans of my stand-up comedy and they've never heard of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And they can never figure out what people are talking about when it comes up. But, The similarity between the two, actually, and part of the reason why Wait, Wait is such a great fit for me and such a wonderful opportunity for me, is that they allow not just me, but all of us panelists, they encourage us to say whatever we want whenever we want to say it. And so it's really a free-for-all. It's a joyful free-for-all. Oftentimes with topics that are... sometimes of a more serious nature. I mean, sometimes, you know, people make me nervous when they say stuff like, that's how I get my news. I'm like, oh, don't do that. You know, listen to Morning Edition, throw on, you know, the PBS NewsHour, maybe some BBC. Don't get your news from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Do you have any funny stories from behind the scenes or maybe on the scenes, favorite moments in the show?
Well, I love doing this show. I was riding in a cab one time, and, you know, cab drivers listen to the radio, and so, I don't know, I said something to the guy, he recognized my voice. And it happened to be a weekend day, and he said, oh, I just listened to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and they had Bill Clinton on. And I was so pissed when I heard this. So I go to Peter, my boss, and the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and, I'm known for being somewhat verbose, unfortunately. It's not on purpose. I just am. And I said, Peter, how could you have Bill Clinton on without me? And he said, Paula, if we had you and Bill Clinton on at the same time, we'd still be recording.
A missed opportunity,
I'm pleased that Bill Clinton and I have a similar challenge. They said that he was very lengthy, and I think he answered questions. I'm not positive about this, but either about My Little Pony or Smurfs.
Wow, I'm going to have to listen back to that. Presidential advice about the Smurfs is hard to come by these days. Well, Paula, you're going to be in Green Bay. You're going to be in where else? Red Wing, Minnesota?
I am going to be in Red Wing, Minnesota. Both places I've been before, and I'm delighted to go back to.
Well, great. We look forward to having you and hope you have a fabulous time in those places. And people are going to enjoy seeing you new material or just going to see what happens?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. All right. Well, sounds good, Paula. Thanks a lot for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Veronica. It was nice talking with you.
That's Paula Poundstone, comedian, author, actress, and, of course, she's a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And she's going to be coming to Green Bay this Saturday for a performance at the city's Meyer Theater.
When I listen to Wait, Wait, sometimes I think, wow, it would be a lot of fun to do a show like that. And then I think it would also be terrifying to do a show like that with all these really funny people spontaneously react to these things. And you'd be worried you'd be the guy there. You guys go ahead.
Get the cane. Rob yeah. Ferret's on board.
Stick around. More to come. Wisconsin Life continues this month's exploration of faith in Wisconsin. For three generations, one Milwaukee family has been providing church supplies to Christian congregations throughout the United States.
Oh, wow. Oh, have you been in here yet?
No.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
So, statuary.
just for radio, it's we're standing in front of, I don't know, 100 different statues of
Joseph, patron saints, nativity sets, angels. That particular corpus of Christ is 6 feet tall. It's made of plaster, has glass eyes. I have a piece upstairs that's 8 feet tall, made of copper. But this collection of statuary probably dates back anywhere from the late 1800s through the 1950s. I am Dan Stemper, and I'm the president at the T.H. Stemper Company here in Milwaukee. We're a small niche market business, and we sell church supplies and furnishings and apparel to Christian denomination churches. The history of our business goes back to 1911. My grandfather purchased a business called the European Statuary and Art Company, and it was at the same site in Bayview. I come from a family of eight, so all eight of us at one time have worked here. Five of the brothers are equal owners of this business today. We have approximately 40,000 square feet of usable space. I'm kind of the bean counter in the family. So I probably, in inventory, I have anywhere from $600,000 to $800,000 invested in inventory at any given day. Candles are the number one product line. We have 1,100 different candles. Communion trays, the offering plates, the common cups, the intinction sets, the ciborias, the flagons, cruets, and candlesticks and bells and altar crucifixes, altar crosses. It's just a never-ending supply. The other thing that we sell is we do a lot of restoration. We sell chalices new, we restore old. We sell new tabernacles, we can restore the old. Anything made of brass or bronze can pretty much be restored. The items, which are considered sacred vessels, they're delicate. They're expensive. They're not mass-produced. One of our goals is to take these sacred vessels and put them back into use for what they were originally intended. Yes, I'm a for-profit business. I have 14 employees, and I want to make sure that we can survive and they can retire and they can count on us every morning when we open the door. But I also like the people that are my customers, and it certainly makes the job more fulfilling. I find that it definitely enhances my faith life. I'm Catholic. I'm born and raised Catholic. I think that I'm doing a service to the church.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more info online at wisconsinlife.org.